We know what's at stake. We know what we've been through to get to this point. And we know, you know, what we're playing for. And, you know, we're playing for our fans. We're playing for our city. But play for the guys in the room and for each other.
Riley drops it back. Marner closing. Scores! Mitchell Marner answers the critics. 18 games without a goal, but he's got 3 points tonight.
I was asked questions down the stretch of the regular season with how important home ice was. And you know, I felt that it would be important. I didn't feel it would be that important.
Whew, just got chills. Chilly chill chills. The Fan Morning Show. J.D. Bunkus. Ailish Forfar. Blake Murphy. I'm going to do my best today to not overreact, okay? I just want to put it out there that I'm not going to do
plan
what everybody thinks I'm going to do.
Plan the parade.
No, none of that. That's so played out. Anybody who makes a plan the parade joke, you're in moon jail. Like, that should be automatic moon jail for anybody who says plan the parade. Anybody who makes those jokes, Ailish, first to go, first to the... You know what, actually, Ailish, it's got to be even harsher than moon jail for you. We have to set a standard. You get isolation, solitary confinement.
Is it like
confinement.
Mars jail?
No, that's you're just solitary confinement in moon jail. Okay. So, I'm going to start by saying this. So that was Sheldon Keefe, and he's talking about the fans and how jacked up that building was last night. And that place does get loud in big moments and big games. I know the Toronto crowd gets a bad rap or whatever, because it's true, it can be late arriving and always late to get back to seats. The people go up and get their sushi. Get a little sushi during the breaks. Grab a fancy beer. Spend the... What was the A-list item of how much you spend per beer? And this, we're the number one.
I think it was over $30.
Yeah, it's outrageous. And it was stadium, by the way. I saw that stat. But they were rocking last night. And this city was rocking last night. And you remember that. That's a good hockey crowd. People in the city know the game. People in the city care about the game. And people in the city have a ton of excitement about that Toronto Maple Leafs hockey team. And Sheldon Keefe went on to say that he thought the crowd carried them through that penalty kill. And I 1,000,000,000% agree with him. That place was on fire last night. But let me just start with this. Everyone is going to try to kick Leaf fans in the guts today by saying what your joke, the plan the parade joke, and the don't overreact, it's one game. And I saw one bozo with a tweet about the Leafs being excited when they had their 3-1 lead last year against Montreal Canadiens. This fan base, nobody believes less in the Leafs than this fan base, okay? Deep down. You don't need to tell Leafs fans to play the parade or do any of these jokes. Everybody here is actually unbelievably rational. The issue is that there's a 10 billion more Leaf fans than any other fan base on Earth, and that's why you look at Twitter, you see all the reactions to different stuff, you see all the media coverage, and all the hockey universe goes, look at the coverage this is getting. There's so much more. It's disproportionate with what we get. Yeah, there's way more of us than you. There's way more. So the odd time you might see the bad take or you might see the overemphasized fan, that's a you thing. That's not a reality thing. No one's overly excited about that game. But here's the thing. How could you not be at least a little excited, and how would you not want to be a little excited, right? Can we not agree, the three of us, that last night... Can we start here? Was last night not unbelievably exciting? I was fully prepared for Leafs letdown city. Leafs just going to come out flat. Kyle Clifford has that horrific hit, and I'm thinking, oh my God, this is how this is going to go? Unbelievable. To kill that penalty, to turn that around, to have that building be that on fire, and have everybody, every single player in the lineup essentially contribute to an incredible win, how could you not be excited?
No, I mean, I feel like yesterday was the perfect game one that the Toronto Maple Leafs could have scripted. Even with the Clifford thing that happened, they built so much momentum after that, and it completely put the Leafs in the driving seat and let them be the ones to determine how the game went. Everything from their stars showing up to Jack Campbell getting a shutout to them actually out-coaching a team, which you talked about yesterday for the first time ever in a playoff series in a game. They were better at 5-on-5. they held up to the physicality and
they're better on special teams.
Some of it, they're better on special teams. Like, you can go through the list of things that mm-hmm. were perfect about that game in terms of Toronto Maple Leafs. And so when we look at how do we feel, yeah, it's pretty hard to not be super overly optimistic after that, but we deserve that, you know. And after the game last night, Keefe was talking about what he expects from his team moving on. Well, you appreciate that game. You let it give you momentum, but as soon as you wake up today, it's about the game too. But you still have lots you can build on from game one, obviously, and you should have a moment of joy for what you're able to do in game one. And I think you're right about the home ice being the biggest determining factor of how you get out of a 5-minute PK and make that into momentum. I think the crowd deserves all the love for that one.
Yeah, and even if you're a fan, even if you're not going as far as joy, I think you have to, at a minimum, feel a sense of relief where the first 12 minutes of that hockey game went about as poorly to script as you could have imagined, where, yes, there's the early penalty, you kill it off. Okay, you survived one against Tampa Bay. And then Clifford, who, look, he was the one questionable thing with the lineup they rolled out there, right? We talked about it with Bourne yesterday. And then that's just the most typical, you play a enforcer type on the fourth line and it backfires penalty. Like, it's just, it was such a nonsense penalty. And a 5-minute power play, you could have been down 2-0, 3-0 mm-hmm. with playing 7 of the first 12 minutes shorthanded. So to survive that and have that carry over into the rest of the game was just, I don't know how, at a bare minimum, you don't feel a big sense of relief that, hey, everything, this has been the everything that can go wrong goes wrong team in the playoffs. And the first 12 to 15 minutes of that game were that. And they steered clear of it and steered out of it. And even, I mean, probably shifted the... I had joked that Kyle Clifford was in the lineup to establish the penalty kill. It kind of worked out that way, where suddenly it's like, oh yeah, you spent a 5-minute power play pulling the puck out of your own end over and over again.
I think that when we look at... I know, JD, you want to talk about our biggest impressions from the game. Well, to me, that is mine. You know, in any other iteration of the Toronto Maple Leafs, to get a 5-minute penalty first 10 minutes of the game, to have 7 minutes of penalty kill in the first 10 minutes of the game, any other team I think would have crumbled in the past. They found a way to make that a momentum building moment. A post game Matthews was asked about it and he said, you know, he heard someone on the bench say, let's build from this, let's find a way to make it something that we can, you know, be successful from. Their stars, other than Marner, didn't touch the ice for like 7 minutes in the beginning of the game. So that can either be defeating and get your momentum out of you, or it can be a way to rally. And that's what they did with the penalty kill. So if I'm taking something from that, it was the moment that they had their backs up against the wall, the Toronto Maple Leafs found a way to dig in and to go through that. Every other Leafs team in the playoffs that we've talked about would have probably fallen apart or crumbled. So if we look at things that are tangible or impressions, is that's a difference. That's a different thing for the Toronto Maple Leafs. We look at how did the regular season prepare you for the postseason? Well, that could be an example of growth, of leadership, of toughness. And toughness doesn't just mean punching people in the face, even though Riley did that quite well. Toughness can be mental toughness and strength against adversity. And they certainly showed that last night. Keefe called them unflappable. That's exactly what they were. They found a way to take the wind out of Tampa's sails. They outchanced them on that 5-minute power play. And from that moment on, you just felt that they had that edge all game long. That's, for me, the biggest impression of a growth from regular season to postseason in just one game.
Yeah, it's a great point, and I don't know how anybody couldn't agree. I'm really glad that I wasn't on a Steve Dangle type live stream during the Clifford penalty, because I said things that could not be unsaid about Kyle Clifford and about Sheldon Keefe heading into this series, because Keefe did some talking about the officials. And he did some talking about expecting violence, and he put in Kyle Clifford, and Kyle Clifford does that, and I'm going, I can't believe it. I truly cannot believe this is happening. And Blake, to your point about wanting to celebrate that. I think if you're a Leaf fan, you absolutely should celebrate that. No one's celebrating it like a Stanley Cup. Like, again, this is so stupid. This fan base has been kicked down so hard that not allowed to enjoy anything. Not allowed to enjoy anything. If you enjoy anything in any way, then you're an idiot. Like, you just enjoy it. That was amazing. That was an awesome win. Ailes just said it. That was not only an awesome win, it was a unique win. Teams don't do it like that. Did you guys watch any of the other hockey last night? I guess the Blues had a pretty damn good game, but the Leafs looked better than anybody last night, like, by far. And if the Leafs look like that, if you can hit that level of play, that's something. Like, you can't tell me, anybody, nobody can tell me that if that team can't keep doing that, Ailish, if that growth that you're talking about can continue, can extend, if you can complete series, if you can find consistency in play, if you can continue to do the things that the Leafs did in that game, then you really do have a chance of winning. So absolutely you can celebrate that. Absolutely you can dream on that. The Clifford thing, he takes that hit. I know people are just having fun, but they went like, Clifford, set the tone. And this. No, that was a horrifically dumb penalty. Like, unbelievably dumb. Could have buried them right out of the gate. His teammates deserve all the credit. The crowd deserves all the credit. But that was the thing about it is, it wasn't like Tampa even built a little bit of momentum. They never put Toronto on their heels once. Did Tampa have a dangerous moment in that game? There was one time, there was a couple things that I noted. Kucherov had two times where he got really good shooting position, and for whatever reason, he tried to make plays, passing plays, every single time. He was just in his own head. Kucherov looked lost in that game. Some bozo moments from him.
Stamkos had that empty net where he fanned on it.
It got in on handcuffed him a little bit, never got right. And then the other one was that odd man rush that Jack Campbell makes a good glove save, but that's at the very end of the game. It's like a 5-0 game at that point. Tampa was completely non-threatening. But that power play, the Leafs are just putting the pressure on them, putting the pressure on them. I couldn't believe it. Tampa was on their heels, and you could tell, and this is something that I guess is confirmation bias when it ends up happening, but you could tell that at the, what, 3-minute mark, 2.5-minute mark of that penalty kill, that Tampa wasn't going to do anything. Like, that they were done.
So this, it's a little early for this, but one big number today is related to the penalty kill. So
never too early for numbers.
Yeah. So this is something we talked about a couple times during the season, and it's that this penalty kill has done an historically good job putting opponents on their heels. So on the penalty kill this season, the Leafs averaged 22.6 shot attempts per 60 on the penalty kill. We only have data back as far as 2007. That is by far the highest. So the most aggressive and the most shot-heavy penalty kill in the data era. They're also were second last in shot attempts allowed. Only Carolina's penalty kill, by the way, is I dug into some of the numbers. Oh my goodness. Ridiculous in terms of not allowing chances the other way. And then so the Leafs are taking more shots on the penalty kill than anyone else, allowing fewer than anyone other than Carolina. And then Mitch Marner, who I know we're going to talk lots about it, and he spends a ton of time. He spends 5 minutes on the penalty kill last night. In his first period, he plays 3 minutes shorthanded, 3 minutes power play, 3 minutes even strength. Number two among all forwards in terms of shot share, possession share, when on the penalty kill this year. It's just, it's remarkable how good the Leafs penalty kill has been. And you can credit to Kampf, who plays the most PK minutes. You can credit to Marner, who's the most versatile. Kerfoot, I thought Engvall had a really, really strong defensive game last night. This is one of the best penalty kills in the league, and it's, I mean, shoot, to stay in there and hang for 13 minutes of penalty kill time against this team, just remarkable.
Well, it's funny because we spend so much time talking about the blue line, the blue line, the blue line, and they need guys who can clear the front of the net and make sure Tampa doesn't go to the dirty areas. You know who the guys that were primarily responsible for that on the PK were? All the forwards. Marner, Kampf, Engvall, Mikheyev. Those guys were monsters in that game. And it's a perfect lead-in because those guys, to me, were the four stars of the game. Kerfoot as well. Like, those guys, those forwards, they dictated this game.
And Ailish, you mentioned toughness earlier and how it's not just hitting someone. There are other elements of toughness. And I thought, obviously, Marner had a bunch of points. He had a beautiful goal where, when's the last time you saw Vasilevsky get faked out like that? But the play that stood out to me the most is on Kampf's shorthanded goal. Marner stands in there and eats a hit to set up that play and make sure it's tilting in the other direction. And that, to me, is the kind of playoff toughness we're talking about. You spend a you're a skill player, you're a finesse player, and you spend that much time in a game on the PK, and you're standing in there eating one to set up possession going the other way. It ends in a camp goal. Obviously, that's not going to happen a ton shorthanded, but I thought it was a great play by Marner. I thought it was very indicative of the style of game he played beyond just the points.
Okay, so let's start with those two guys, because I think that Marner and Camp were the two MVPs of the game. And then you can go down the line and you can kind of go through different players and who did what. And everyone was great, but those two guys, they stood out above anyone else, right? Like, those two guys had what a game. And it started with the PK. Marner's game was obviously far more complete, but since we're talking about the penalty kill, I'm just going to start with Camp, who... I tweeted this, but he was everywhere on that penalty kill. They could not find any open space, and I'm going, defensively, this guy is two guys. I'm wondering if he's got some clone situation that he's able to do. I don't even know how time travel, where it's just he's moving from one space to another, but he was just eliminating so many parts of the ice for Tampa Bay on that penalty kill. And for him to break down, the guy that is never expected to provide any offense, providing absolutely some offense, I was blown away by him. And probably out of all the free agent signings, and I don't mean to disparage anyone, but we spent all this time talking about Bunting, right? Bunting, Bunting, Bunting. Didn't miss Bunting one time. Forgot that he was at a lineup. In fact, kind of thought to
myself,
even
with the physicality, because you would think he'd be right up in there. That was already taken care of.
Thought to myself, how could you take Kerfoot off that top line after what you saw yesterday? How would you tinker with the lines? The only thing you can do is put Bunting down on the fourth line. But at this point, I would go uber cautious with him and throw Spezza in there. I don't want to see Spezza not play two games. I just think that that's bad juju, and I think Spezza deserves to play, okay? I didn't like Spezza sitting for Clifford in the first place. I want to see Spezza get some playoff minutes. And I thought that especially when the Leafs had their second power play unit out on the ice and the puck would go out to the left or to the right flank and Spezza wasn't there to take shots. It was noticeable. It was a lot more noticeable than not having Clifford. Or I just think it was more impactful than not having Clifford. Either way, Camp was
25
brilliant.
Seconds of Clifford.
Camp was brilliant in that game. That and where I was going with that free agent take is just simply that guy drove his own success all year long. That guy was situationally independent, one of if not the best Leafs defensive forward. And I think at times that got a little underappreciated because Bunting was playing with the top guys and doing the dirty work. Kasha was playing great and putting up numbers as well, and he was a cheap contract. He's someone that's done more in the league from an output standpoint, right? They had found value on other contracts, and then we had spent time on some of the other bad ones that they had this offseason, whether it was Mrazek or Richie. He kind of just quietly, all season long, did his job, built up confidence, and that penalty kill unit, Blake, that you brought up the numbers about and how historically good they are, we can talk about coaching, blah, 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 blah. There's lots of players that are responsible for it, but in my opinion, if there's one guy you want on the ice more than anyone else in that situation, it's David Camp, and oh my God, what a thing that is. And this isn't mine. Someone else brought this up, and I read it somewhere. I can't remember who had it. I'm sorry I'm not attributed to them, but it was someone brought up potential X factors for the series, and he was overlooked because if you look back a year, what did the Habs have that worked so unbelievably well against the Toronto Maple Leafs? It was a shutdown middle of the ice center who killed everything, who hurt Matthews and Marner, who just dominated the play. Deneau, and he can be their Deneau. They have their own playoff Deneau. They might have seen it happen to them. And Dubas went out and grabbed his own guy, and he was amazing last night. Truly incredible last night. Other than Marner, my favorite player.
Yeah, I don't think anyone this year has, other than maybe, not even Bunting. Nobody this year has impressed me or come from status of not knowing who the hell you are to being
exactly
so reliable and needed for this team than him. And I think he does it in such a quiet way. And you're right, the comparison between him and Bunting is, well, Bunting was on the top line and he was the guy, the hometown guy that signed the contract that came out of nowhere. So he had a little bit more coverage. But
good season,
right, Camp,
credit to him, but
great,
not
great season. Yeah.
Bunting or
sure,
Camp, but, like, do you think that they would have looked the same without Bunting last night or Camp?
No.
Like, No, come on.
Kampf. It's all Kampf. And you're right. I like the idea of the X factors, because when it comes down to it, if your top players are playing how they played last night and your goaltending is going well, the other team could match that, right? Vasilevsky can have a game like Jack Campbell had. You're going to see the next game that the Tampa Bay Lightning play. I'm sure they're not going to look like that. But it's when you get a little bit deeper down the roster, is where do you have the edge? Is it on the special teams? Is it on the shutdown? And I think that that's where the Leafs' depth hopefully can have the edge up. And it means something like a Kampf having a game like he did last night. And the people like Engvall and Mikheyev, those people that we don't spend as much time talking about because they're not Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares. And I think that's an exactly what you want from a Stanley Cup contending team, is to have people all over the lineup that are going to give you what they're there for. They're going to play their role, and they're not going to shy away from knowing that I got to be big in a moment of a PK, and that's my whole role, and it's going to determine how this game goes. And that's exactly what Kampf did last night.
And not just a moment, like the volume to spend 7.5 minutes on the penalty kill in a game and be that pristine and not make a mistake. Like, you have to go back to 2015 to Daniel Winnick, to the last time someone played that much penalty kill time, that forward played that much penalty kill time in a playoff game. Like, that's how rare this is. Bozak had one that was about equal last year, but basically nobody is tasked with this much PK time in a playoff game. And so to do that at that volume, and then, yeah, I mean, Marner, Kerfoot, Engvall really chipped in, but Kampf, man, like, he played more penalty kill time than Muzzin and Brody in that game. It's just, it's unbelievably taxing to play that heavy a load and play mistake-free hockey shorthanded for that amount of time.
By the way, it's Text Line Tuesday today. We're going to have the text lines open all day. Send in your Leafs thoughts this morning. Are you ready, as I joked, to play in the parade? But no, seriously, what impressed you the most about that game? Are you fully onto the belief that Matthews and Marner are back and they're ready to erase the demons? Just anything you want to fire at us, 590-590, also in the DMs, Instagram, Twitter, JD Bunkus, Ailish Forvar, and E. Blake Murphy. Find us, send us your thoughts. We'll be reading those throughout the show. So Text Line Tuesday, hit us up.
So I'm now going to refer to Play on the Parade as PTP, and it's banned from the show. I'm banning the show from ever saying it, and it's done. You can do PTP.
Only the very last game. You're the most banned.
Stanley Cup you're the
playoffs.
Most banned. I'm just so disappointed in anybody who ever brings it up or even uses the joke. When someone DMs it to you or tweets it at you, you go, oh, I cannot think of anything lamer. You've officially taken on just complete lame status, if that's the thing that you want to do. Now, on to Marner, the other guy, the MVP of this game. To me, nothing more important, right? What's more important than a guy who hadn't scored in 18 playoff games getting a goal? Riley was incredible on that play, by the way, setting him up, getting the zone.
Oh, yeah.
And he owes him one. But for a guy that sets up his teammates in the way that he does, who cares? Marner was awesome. He was dominant last night. Start to finish. There was no moment where I looked at Marner and thought, he's double clutching here. He's not looking good here. He was perfect. That was a perfect Mitch Marner game. And honest to God, out of everything from that game that felt good to me, it was seeing that Marner moved right from regular season Marner into playoff Marner completely seamlessly. He took big hits. He took big shots. He kept rolling through it. I'm nervous about his ability to hold up throughout that. I'll be honest. I remember that series against Boston where on the penalty kill, I think he took a shot that changed him and he never scored again. That was literally what it was. It was early on in the series. Takes a blocks a shot and boom, never the same guy. He's still smaller, so you don't want to see him get hit. But his impact all over the ice, 200-foot game, by far the best player in that game. And this was it, right? We said Marner and Matthews need to set the tone for this series. Matthews has two goals, and outside of those two moments, I didn't notice him as much in that game, but it was okay because Marner was dominant.
There is nothing more important than starting the series on the right foot as a team, especially, we talked about that yesterday, but for Marner to come out to be unfazed by the noise, by the pressure, he was a man possessed. Like, he had something to prove, and he did that. He proved it in one game, and I know there's a lot more hockey to play, but you just think about the momentum from somebody that gets that release and that confidence boost that he's played that way all season long. And the question of, can you do it in the playoffs? Well, yeah, game one, you did it. So there's not even that question in the back of your mind now. Like, as a player, you can just say, hey, I have it. I'm going to continue to build on that. And if you can do that, this is a completely different series. This is a completely different playoff run. Just to have that one goal, the two assists, the play that he had, the domination, like, I don't know how you cannot feel confident that, once again, there was something learned in this regular season and in the postseason. He talked a lot about the mental side of the game, you know, in what he had to do this offseason. And it shows that some of that obviously was put into practice and has early on here has worked. So you want to see growth, you want to see maturity, and you want to see that edge. And he brought all of that last night.
He was incredible, and it was early and often. Nylander had his legs early. He looked incredibly fast, sort of disappeared. But again, the game script was the game script. It was just interesting to see Marner never change despite whatever the game script was. And granted, he got to play more and he got to be more forceful because of that penalty kill. But geez, you just, the playmaking, the vision, the intelligence, the toughness in which he played with, it was a more mature Marner. It just, it really was. And there's no way that I don't care how much he mentally prepared for this playoff, whatever, that making sure that that goalless drought in the playoffs ended at 18 games, that he scores right away, that he ends up with 3 points in a game. He had 4 points all playoffs last year. You got to have one more, kid, to match your playoffs from a season ago. You're doing great. He's going to make there's going to be a billion freezing takes exposed about Marner if he can carry that play through the postseason, and I'll be right there with all of you in the freezing takes exposed whatever cryo chamber, wherever those things last, wherever they save those things from the freezer. They'll be chipping out my old tweets, same things, my same takes. Okay, so a couple other things I want to hit on quickly. What did you guys think about the officiating?
I thought it was a little
unexpected. Both you guys sighed, so I got my answer. It was
yeah.
Bad.
Yeah. I thought it was a little unexpected. So, you know, what was it? 23 minutes of that game played not at even strength. That's a lot. And that's I put it in the doc there that this is the first time in 5 years that two teams both had over 50 penalty minutes in a playoff game. Like, this is, even in really physical and chippy series, this was pretty outlierish. I don't know if that this was a case of the NHL has an edict of this year of all years, don't call it differently in the playoffs, that kind of thing. I thought there were a couple softies both ways, but also it was at least consistent, I thought. What was a hold or an interference or a trip was a hold or an interference or a trip. There's only one instance I could think of where one of those in front of the net cross checks didn't really get called. So all I ever ask from the officials is consistency, whether that's consistently good or consistently light. I thought there was that at least.
I don't want to have to talk about officiating ever in a series. I want it to be fair, and I want it to be, okay, that was a penalty and that was called, and you know, they're not the storyline. There's certainly a lot of conversation about it where it became one of the main narratives of a game, and that's when you know that's an issue. There was definitely some penalties that should have been called. Like, I have no problem with that Clifford penalty. I have no problem with a hook and interference, cross-checking, but there's a lot of soft ones that started trickling through, and I thought, okay, are they trying to set the tone that there's no room for this borderline violence in this series? It kind of felt like they were trying to be like, yeah, hey, don't you dare let this get out of control. Well, it did during one of the intermission, one of the commercial breaks, but it was funny.
Oh,
we miss that? And then we're seeing the replay of selected replay.
We missed Labushkin dummying a ref.
With his he was jerseyed and he starts punching blindly and he hits a ref. But anyway, I just think that I wondered if some of the pre-series comments trickled through. I really hope not. I don't know if refs listened to that, but it really did feel like they were, okay, if that's what you think this series is going to be, we're going to do the opposite and control everything. I didn't love that. I'm hoping that they ease off a little bit for game two.
No, Sheldon Keefe can have no complaints. One, because his team just pitched a perfect game. The crowd was incredible, but that's exactly the series Sheldon Keefe wants. Of course it is. And I thought the Leafs responded extremely well to the physical play in this game, and that it was, again, another real positive for them is they never backed down, and it never seemed once like Tampa was too physical for them. Did it seem like that to you? Even when they're getting the scrum, I was a little worried about Morgan Riley and Patrick Maroon kind of classlessly grabbing him and trying to fill him in while the refs aren't looking. It's a complete mismatch, and him throwing the mitts like that was...
I will say, in that skirmish, somebody had Kasha, and they kind of pushed... They didn't punch him in the face. I forget who it was on the Tampa Bay team.
I love how you're bringing this up. You're like, everybody was nice to
little... But no, honestly, that was that's to me something that is some little bit of sportsmanship. Like, you're about to punch this guy in the face that's had 100 concussions this year, and you didn't. That's a little bit of a A-list moment. Good for him.
All right, hockey is amazing sport. Like, you didn't punch somebody. That's a classy move by you.
It was class.
I know.
Imagine Kasha gets punched in the face, and here we are talking about Kasha out of the series. Oh, save that.
So, protect my little Kasha boy. Yeah, and even Morgan Riley, like, what he did to Jan Ruda, like... Man, everyone, I hope Riley's hand's okay, because it looked like he was favoring it a bit after that.
It's his first fight since 2016.
He'll be fine.
Yeah, I think Ruda came out the... tiny little nick on his hand. The worst... Yeah. Well, and was it a nick, or was it just the other guy's blood? That's...
I think he nicked up his hand a little. You don't like to see that from a skilled defenseman like Riley, but...
Yeah.
Either way, I loved how the Leafs didn't back down. It never felt like that the Lightning were physically imposing on them, and I guess maybe because they never had the puck, but yeah, I never once felt like Tampa was threatening. So their bounce back game, all of a sudden all the pressure has shifted onto them. It's prove it. Prove that you can even hang with that team, because boy, oh boy, oh boy, the Leafs just look so much better than you. But kind of getting back to the officiating, that's got to be a little bit in Tampa's head. What I hate about that officiating, though, is because I was arguing about it with Christopher Stieg, who's on later today at 9 o'clock. He says call the rules, and I get it. I want that too. Call the rules, right? You don't want the officiating to deviate too much from the regular season to playoffs, blah, blah, blah. You don't want guys getting away with murder. But when you call the game that way, one, I think it screws with the game itself, because hockey is this beautiful, free-flowing sport, right? And to have it be stop, start, where it's special teams battle, that's not what anybody wants to see. That's not as entertaining of a product. Nobody wants that. But, Blake, you said the thing about consistency, and that's the issue I have with calling a lot of penalties early. I thought they got bailed out by the Leafs. If the Leafs aren't up 5-0 in that game, and there's a penalty discrepancy in some way, you're biting your fingernails off because you know the officials are looking to even these things up. And that's how it felt in that game, and that's what was so annoying, is that they're going, oh, call the rule book, call the rule book. Well, great. That's only problem one. Problem two is that these officials always want to even it up. You knew Toronto was getting the next power play after the Clifford hit, after they'd killed 7 minutes of penalties. What were the percentages, if you could have bet that in Vegas, that Toronto was going to get the next power play? Like -1200? -1500? Like, you couldn't bet that. Because we all know as hockey fans, we go, we're getting the next one. And that's in their heads too. And so once you start doing the ticky-tack game, it becomes, well, now you get a ticky-tack, and you get a ticky-tack, and you get a ticky-tack. And it comes down to the last stretch of the game, and the officials have to decide, well, now are we going to be inconsistent with what's happened the entire game? Or are we going to have to call some ticky-tack in the most physical moment of the game when it's on the line, usually in a close one? And I hate that. And so... to me, there was a whole bunch of them. Sergachev, the one that he got called on Kampf, was like a true outrage. Like, if I'm a Tampa fan, I couldn't believe that they... What is he supposed to do? He's not allowed to play defense. He's just supposed to let him score. You're not allowed to push anymore. You're not allowed to hit. There was there were just a couple in there that are awful. Like, really, really, really bad penalty calls. So, to me, I hope that... I guess if you're a Toronto fan and you just want to see them win... you're hoping for that, because obviously their special teams units are on point and they look way better than Tampa's. But if you're just kind of a fan of hockey, I think that that's a bad direction for the game, going to that extreme all of a sudden. No one wants them to go to let the game be completely played, but there has to be a better balance than that. And we say officials lose control of games when it goes the way of them not calling penalties. I thought the officials lost control of the game in terms of being too ticky-tack in that one. I hope we don't see more of that. That was bad. No one can say that wasn't bad.
Keep the text coming. Also, 590 about that specifically. I know a bunch of people had comments on that online. Perfect. So put them in. Let us read your text on air.
Yeah, in terms of whether this is a league edict or just a Leafs Lightning series thing. St. Louis and Minnesota dealt with the same kind of thing. They had 9 penalties each last night, and a lot of that game was played on special teams. But the other two games were pretty normal, like within the band of expectation, even maybe even officiated a little tight. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. And it's also a little hard to tell because I think score effects exist for officials too, where once a team gets up, you know, 3-4 goals, they call the game a little differently. So it's something to monitor for sure, JD. I think it's probably something that I would be more concerned with in a close game, obviously. But I don't know how much of that was this game was a blowout and they're trying not to let anything build for the rest of the series.
But it didn't work.
I'm not sure.
If anything,
yeah, it didn't work.
Like,
that's
it didn't
for
work
sure.
at all. That's yeah. why it doesn't matter. It just the game is situational. It doesn't matter. So I wondered the same thing. Hey, did these guys start to go in this direction after the Clifford hit? Because the first penalty was a little soft, but it was right in front of the net, and you can't really you can't really quibble with it too much. Brody gets underneath the hands of a player that's about to put a backhand slot chance on goal. That's kind of a penalty. That's actually one where I go, that is what you want called in a playoff series. That's one you want called pretty much anywhere. But from that point forward, it just kind of felt like, okay, it's your turn, it's their turn, it's your turn, it's their turn, it's your turn, it's their turn on ticky-tack the entire way through. So I hope it shifts a little bit, but I'm not complaining today. It's a very, very down the totem. How many games for Clifford, by the way? I think 5. I think that's a bare minimum 5-game suspension. He sees him for a couple of strides, and he buries him in the glass. And I know he was primed, and I actually think that that's one where you got to be careful what you say.
It's retaliatory, too. Like, that's worse. That adds to your amount of suspension, for sure.
It was a bad hit.
You went after the guy because you were intent to injure.
Yeah, I thought that it got worse every time I saw it. They put a lot of highlights of the hit. And every angle they showed, I went, oh, my God, it's a worse hit than I even thought.
I will say, do you think it was ironic that he's also number 43 and got suspended? Shout out Kadri.
Yeah, I think that...
Maybe they should retire that jersey number. You can't wear that jersey number in the playoffs, okay?
I agree. That the Kadri 43 thing was not lost on me.
Spooky.
Yes, it was...
You know I like numbers, not that number, okay?
No, and that was a dangerous hit. Nobody wants to see that.
It was just 2 weeks ago that Clifford got away with just a fine for the stick to the head on Corey Perry.
Yeah.
It's not like this. It's not like the Department of Player Safety doesn't have Clifford front of mind after the last couple games. And I mean, it's going to stand out, obviously, with him even playing in this series. So I would expect he gets a little bit. He has a weird history with some of these guys, too, where, like, he almost got suspended for a hit on Bellemare a couple years ago, too. I don't know. I would imagine that he's getting something.
Yeah, he's absolutely getting something. I think it should be 5. It was a horrific hit. Like, a really, really... That's how you do some real damage hit. Like, I hated that.
And look, the actual suspension number is only going to determine how much paycheck he's losing. I think for the Leafs' purposes and our purposes, he's done.
Yeah.
If I see him in a game again, barring injury, I'm going to be upset.
I will say this, though. This is what was interesting, is that clearly you want to have Simmons available to you because of the way that this series is, right? You can't take Simmons out after that game. Bunting is going to have to come back in at some point, but I also think Spezza could play as well. And I don't know if they'll be overly cautious, but I did get a sense of, well, even with this one player coming out, you kind of have two players that you'd like to get in. And I don't think that they'll take Blackwell out. I thought he prized himself pretty well, although there was nothing funnier than him going 1-on-1 with Victor Hedman. And it was...
Yeah, that was tough. Just dump it in at that point.
Yeah, I was going to say, just shoot it. Just shoot it from a horrible angle. Like, you actually thought you were going to beat Hedman wide? Like, that was hilarious. That's like watching Muggsy Bogues go in on just like Dikembe Mutombo and be like, I'm going to get a layup. I'm like, nope, this is definitely not going to happen for you. So I thought that went... I wondered, how many times would Blackwell have to go in on Hedman exactly like that for him to get a chance on net? 200? 300? Like, I don't know how many it would be. Like, that gets played over in the simulation over and over and over again, is that exact result. Hedman, easy takeaway. Either way, it's going to be interesting to see what forwards come in and whether two come out or whether Spezza continues to sit, because it just felt awkward having him up there. And I'm not trying to play for... sentimentality. I really thought he could help them last night. All right, let's take a break and let's do the A-list. It's the Fan Morning Show. Text line Tuesday, text away, 590-590. Hit us up, Twitter and Instagram, at JD Bunkus, at A-list4far, at E. Blake Murphy. The A-list, next.
The smartest takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, SportsNet 590, The Fan. It's text line Tuesday. Hit us up 590-590, and in the DMs, Elish, Blake, and JD, you know how to find us. Also, download, subscribe, 5 stars, promote, review our podcast. Mm-hmm. It's the A-list.
Now, it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
I have 3 baseball-related A-lists today. Just how it
Look
goes.
Look at you, you seam head.
Yes, seam head. I love that. I am going to the game tonight, so maybe I was just in the mood for Blue Jays. So,
Manoa.
You know the name Jose Ramirez well.
I do.
He's been linked to the team for many years. He was a heartbreaker when he decided to stay in Cleveland.
I already hate
speaking
where this
about.
Is going.
Yep, he was speaking with reporters about his decision to stay in Cleveland and about his new contract, and it is something. Quote, I got to a point where I had to decide between the option of being traded or sign the extension. Regarding the extension, for me, $100 million is the same as $200 million. Mm-hmm. End quote. Super relatable. We're all trying to afford $1.90 gas, deciding if we can afford the extra 50 cents for oat milk at the coffee shop, but there are some people living in the luxury of passing up $100 million because it's just meaningless to them.
You know why, though? It's because he's valuable and you guys aren't. Okay, so how about that? that guy is the best hitter in baseball right now. He's raking to start this season. So when you're that good at something, you should be rewarded by society for your endeavors and your efforts. I'm thrilled that you're struggling out there, bummy Joe, who doesn't contribute anything, and that he's doing well. All right? That's the way it should be. Jose Ramirez, you know, this is a communist place. What is this, commie rant that you just had there? Go, Ramirez, go. Get your money.
$100 million on the table.
So what?
Live in Cleveland. So I've never been to Cleveland, but is it worth losing $100 million to live there or to go play somewhere else?
Well,
everybody's trying to flee to the Cleve.
Yeah.
Really? Is it the new hot spot to live?
No,
you got to get up on your 30 Rock reference. After you're done your 18th office.
I'm actually in the middle of Parks and Rec.
But
does it make you feel worse about the Jays losing him that he gave up $100 million to stay in Cleveland? How much is your loyalty worth? Those are
already feel bad.
To ponder.
I already feel bad because the Jays were linked to Jose Ramirez, and he's amazing. And who cares if you would have traded a bunch of prospects because they're prospects. And as much as we're excited about the futures of Gabriel Moreno and whoever else would have been in that deal, look at that guy go. He's amazing. I think right now he's leading baseball in OPS. And if you look at this Blue Jays offense, they've sputtered and they've been pretty bad. And the point I made about the Jays this offseason was that they didn't really improve the bats. And if you look at the bar that was set by Bo and by Vladdy and by what Semien left behind, it was really tough to replace. And the only thing that you could take moving forward was, well, you're going to have a full season of Springer. And I went, that's a great point. You're already seeing just his impact night in, night out. But, boy, could you imagine Ramirez in the middle of this lineup right now? Like, could you imagine how they lost Teoscar Hernandez and you go, who cares? Because Ramirez is protecting Vladdy instead of Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Matt Chapman's millionth strikeout? Like, it would be amazing.
Yeah, they would have a worse record in one-run games because they wouldn't be playing any.
Yeah.
They would just be beating teams up. But, Ailish, my actual response to the Ramirez thing, I'll use a TV show reference that you're more familiar with.
Yes.
The Dwight Schrute, I'm all about loyalty. In fact, I feel like I'm being paid for my loyalty. But if there was someone else that valued that loyalty
exactly.
more highly, I'm going wherever they value loyalty the most.
Yeah, I
spoken
love that.
Like a true
so
legend,
good.
Dwight.
What writing that is! That's
I love
great.
That. I love that. Okay, so let's move on to college baseball. Tennessee baseball started their season so far 40-4. They've yet to lose a series in 2022. Sounds like the Jays. A major reason why: pitcher Ben Joyce. He recorded on the radar gun in a game that he threw a 105.5 mile per hour fastball, which is the second fastest pitch ever recorded in the world, in the universe, in the history of baseball. Not a fluke, though, because he's been clocked with a few pitches over 104 this season. And he has another incredible pitch that is only 82 miles per hour. So his range is incredible. Question is, radar malfunction something to watch as a future star? Are we worried that you could only do that so many times as a 20-year-old without blowing your shoulder out? And for context, Chapman, Aroldis Chapman, that guy, not our Chapman, threw 105.8 mile per hour fastball in 2010, and that is the highest pitch ever recorded in baseball.
I will say that if they would ever let our Chapman throw a baseball, I'd be curious to see how hard he throws it, because the guy's got an absolute cannon. He fires that thing across the diamond like nobody I can even remember. It's just, God, what an arm he has from third base. I love how Ailish brought up radar malfunction as the thing for. It's just,
oh,
you know,
I mean,
like,
some people think, hey, maybe.
Sure,
little,
I know, but I just, I like that.
Radar gun.
It's okay, you cop, like trying to take away this kid's accomplishment that you tried immediately to go radar malfunction. It's fine.
Just posing the question.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can really sustain that unless they're going to be a relief pitcher. I'm a little worried about how hard guys have to try to throw at times, and the ensuing injuries to pitchers. I think that there's something to guys like Julian Merriweather who try to revamp their mechanics entirely, throw 100 and then turn into broken down players. But yeah, who doesn't like hearing? Who doesn't want to see a guy throw a ball hard? Like, I don't know. I do.
Beat the 105.
Is there a highlight of this? Yeah, well, I don't know. I've never heard of this guy until literally 10 seconds ago, but yeah.
Blake seems to know about him. Yeah,
Blake went, oh, yeah. Like,
this guy's my favorite. Like,
oh, I'm so horny for this guy.
The old pitching ninja guy putting that stuff out there. My questions with this guy would be, yes, definitely injury concern when you look at, hey, who's the last guy that threatened a bunch of radar reading records? Well, it's Nate Pearson, and he can't stay on the mound.
Oh,
Also, the fact that he threw 100 in high school and was like a complete non-prospect, and he had to go to the community college route, and his numbers are good, but he's a relief pitcher in college. Like, the guys with this trajectory just like don't break through very often. He'll probably get lots of opportunity because he does throw so hard, and teams will be like, well, what if we could teach him how to actually pitch? It's a little worrisome injury-wise, too, that is mostly all he throws. Like, he's pitched 21 innings this year, and he's already thrown he's pitched what? Yeah, 21 innings this year, and he's already thrown 28 pitches, 103-plus. It'd be one thing to touch it, but it's another if that's your only pitch, right?
Yeah.
So what do you set the odds on of him this season beating the 105.8? He's already at 105.5. You think it happens?
I'll say he does it purely based on what Blake just said of this guy's only chucking those balls, so he maybe touches it or gets a little above it. But to me, he's a long drive guy. You ever see a long drive champion at a driving range? Yeah. You go, oh my God, yes. You should be a pro.
Me.
And then they go, oh, there's actual golf to play here. There's not just this one little freak show act. Like, that's so this guy's freak
like
show.
Happy like, Gilmore.
Cool. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Let me sneak one more in here.
Happy won, though, so how dare you? He could play. Happy learned how to putt.
Well, he had to learn.
Show some respect.
Okay, you know the name, Mike Clevenger.
He had to learn.
You know him? First time since October 2020, Mike Clevenger is back in the big leagues, and he was ready to start pitching again. He's had two Tommy John surgeries, and he's about to start tonight, actually, against his former team. But he's on his way back to the team, not on a private jet or a team charter, and this is what happens. So I'm going to read a quote. We were up 30,000 feet in elevation. The light comes on to move about the cabin. And the next thing we know, we're nose-diving hard, and the air pressure drops in the cabin.
Why are you reading this?
The air conditioning turns off. The captain goes on yelling, the oxygen masks come on. We're plummeting around to 5,000 feet elevation. The guy next to me is trying to keep me calm. I'm freaking out. He's keeping his chill. The flight attendant is crying. She had no bedside manner at all. Anyway, long story short, they survived.
What a dork. He said that?
Yeah, and he tried.
She had no bedside manner at all. Like, you're plummeting to your death.
She's bawling her eyes out. They think they're going to die. He says he tried to text his fiance, couldn't get the text out. He tried to
type. Oh, this is so dark. Why are you reading this?
Okay, but he makes it. They land.
Yeah, I know.
He's going to pitch tonight. But do you think you'd ever fly again if that happened to you?
I don't want to fly again after you read that, bozo. Like, you just killed the flight engineer. Like that was off. You can't avoid these aliens. You're like, well, guys, how would you feel if you almost died in a plane crash? Bad. I'd be scared. It would take me a long time to get over the trauma of
There's
that.
There's always a plane story. So if you can text me 5959, Ailish, then you're still alive.
No. Under no circumstances, text us your scary plane stories. Please.
No. I get scared on a flight when it starts to get a little turbulence. When the turbulence lasts more than a couple bounces, because there's nothing more humbling than that, right? You're on a flight, you're going, air travel is so spectacular. Then it bumps in the air and you go, oh my God, we're in a little tin box in the sky. What are we doing up here? Why did we decide to be up here? Whose invention? Wright brothers, how could you do this to us? You idiots, you idiots, you idiots. We couldn't just take the train and just take our time. Why are we in such a rush? Then you land and everything's cool. But Mike Clevenger, all-time dork maneuver, sewering the stewardess who is afraid to die with
American
no bedside
Airlines
manner.
Has
you're a nerd. I hope you get lit up tonight. I hope you're all jacked up.
I was going to say, so stay tuned. Maybe we put him in the waking rake to
I forgot he existed.
Blow it tonight. Well, he's
they traded
his,
a lot for him. He's 31. Couple of surgeries. They gave up a lot. That could end up being a huge bust trade. I remember I wanted the Jays to get him badly. I thought Jays should get this dude. Again, I don't know if I've ever made a good Jays trade, so that's probably the good news for the Ramirez fans or the Ramirez non-fans. Let's take a break. Let's come back, and let's do some text. Send them in, 590-590, again, at J.D. Bunkus, at E. Blake Murphy, at Ailish Forfar. Reach out to the Fan Morning Show. Tell us what your lasting impressions were from last night's Leafs game, how you're feeling, whatever you want. You're the producers. Fire away. It's the Fan Morning Show. J.D. Blake and Ailish, Sports F59 of the Fan.